What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action? Supporting local food systems amid COVID-19. COVID-19 has stressed every sector in the food system, disrupting the usual processes by which millions of people across North America feed themselves and their families. You've sensed the severity of its impact nationally as you read about another major meatpacking plant closing. You've felt in your community too as your virtual grocery cart sits in a 5-day checkout line. This should not surprise us. Across the food system, production, processing, distribution, access, we've required a beautiful yet complicated web of local contributors to operate for a handful of national players. Stress a particular sector in the system's hierarchy, and understandably, you'll witness a national impact with little actionable feedback. Chris Temblador and his colleagues at the Los Angeles Food Policy Council have, well before COVID-19, understood the downsides of centralized food systems, opting for local food systems that partner with local contributors to ensure Angelenos have access to healthy food, no matter their neighborhood. Today, Chris has witnessed the fruits of the local systems he's helped create. For example, the Healthy Neighborhood Market Network has ensured the populations most impacted by COVID-19 still have access to healthy food. And the organization's Good Food for All agenda has helped policymakers understand how, amid COVID-19, they can improve food access throughout Los Angeles County. COVID-19 hasn't pardoned these systems. Like their national, centralized counterparts, local players in the Los Angeles Food Policy Council systems have too scrambled to serve their communities amid an ever-growing list of stressors. However, as Chris will share with you in this episode, these stressors have prompted local players to innovate, creating a stronger local food system in the process. Enjoy. Chris, what's going on, friend? How are you today?
Hey, Jacob. I'm doing good. Thank you.
Yes, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. You know, we've had a few folk from the Los Angeles Food Policy Council join us on It's the Little Things. We've had Brianna Hawkins. We had Kelly Jackson, owner and operator of Hank's Mini Market in South Central LA. And now I have the pleasure of having you on the podcast to talk about supporting local food systems amid the coronavirus. I know you all over at the LA Food Policy Council have been in this game for a bit, supporting and advocating local food systems. And I know now more than ever with the coronavirus, we're really seeing and witnessing how, you know, this great work that you guys have done to build this foundation of, you know, a local food infrastructure is helping these places thrive and be resilient to ensure that neighbors still have access to healthy food products. So super excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you, Jacob. It's great to be on here.
How are you and your peers doing in South LA amid the coronavirus? Y'all hanging in there?
Absolutely. It's been an interesting time for sure. And we're definitely in contact with our local store owners and just really the community is really staying alive and speaking on social media. So it's the best place to be and to know what's happening and what's going on and how people are adjusting.
Fantastic. I am happy to hear it. Well, Chris, before we get started, I would love to take some time just to learn a little bit more about you. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work you do over at the LA Food Policy Council?
Absolutely. So I'm a resident of South LA and I've seen the community change over the last 30 years, as well as the greater LA community. So I grew up visiting neighborhood markets and working in them as well. So I've been around in the community and today I'm a business counselor and program associate working with the Healthy Neighborhood Market Network. We're a program of the LA Food Policy Council and I get to work directly with neighborhood market owners and food deserts who want to improve their business and want to provide access to fresh produce and healthy alternative foods. And we're able to do this through our technical assistance services and our curriculum. with the ultimate goal to empower neighborhood markets to become healthy food retailers.
And even before the coronavirus, I know that the LA Food Policy Council, and in particular this program, the Healthy Neighborhood Market Network, has long advocated for these small local markets and corner stores. I'm curious, even before we dive into, you know, the resiliency of these food stores amid the coronavirus, what was it about these storefronts that really resonated with the LA Food Policy Council and captured y'all's attention, where you had a deliberate program to work with these folk and help them provide, you know, healthy food within the neighborhoods they serve? What was that decision like, and why did you guys put so much focus on them early on?
The LA Food Policy Council's mission is really to make sure that food is sustainable, equitable, and fair for all. And just having that lens and looking at what was happening during the time back in around 2014, community development was essential. And there was a lot of movement starting to happen where development was happening in neighborhoods, and there was a saturation of a lot of fast food restaurants. So for us, because around that time as well, more people are caring about issues in their neighborhood. And a lot of people are raising awareness around these issues like food access and gentrification and ultimately economic development. We were able to create a unique opportunity where our solution was more holistic, and it was a solution about how do we develop community assets like small businesses and really focus in on neighborhood markets that are in the community. So it really gave neighborhood markets an opportunity to be engaged in the needs of their customers and really begin to make improvements that not only benefit the business, but really also benefit the local community.
And I love that the way that you guys approached food access, Chris. You know, oftentimes, whenever we talk food access, of course, the first idea that comes to mind is, you know, perhaps, okay, this is a neighborhood that's not getting a lot of, you know, love, not a lot of private investment. What do we do to subsidize a large supermarket to move to town? You know, like how many millions of dollars do we need to collect to help get Kroger or Ralph's or whatever the major supermarket is to set up shop in this particular neighborhood? Instead, the approach that y'all took, and I love this, what assets do we already have in the neighborhood? Who is already kind and generous enough to have taken the time to open up a local food store is probably already in the business of serving their neighbors and working with them to help them, you know, serve a healthier product. What was that relationship like with these different merchants? I know, of course, they want to work in their own interest. They have to make a profit, and often that looks like in the form of alcohol and cigarette sales. But I imagine y'all came in with a narrative that captures that enthusiasm of, yes, let's still be viable, let's still be profitable, but help ensure that we're serving our neighbors and helping them lead healthier lives in the process. What was that relationship like for you all?
Our work is very relationship-based, and we approach it building capital in several ways, so not just financial capital. One of the things that we have as a program is an 8-part curriculum where we talk about marketing, we talk about merchandising, pricing and profitability, and also how to manage produce, because some stores might have produce and some won't have any produce at all. So for us, it's about during that process, walking through the curriculum with them, making weekly visits. It's also about supporting marketing efforts. So we're creating mailers to send out to the local community. We're putting on events that are health focused or community based. So we're making those connections as well with partners to introduce new resources like a healthy alternative snack, connecting them to vendors that have more access to affordable fruits and vegetables, and then ultimately really providing tangible resources like refrigerators for produce, merchandisers, signage to promote health and well-being overall. So it's really holistic in a way where we're not just walking in and placing produce in a specific place, but really like, how do we promote this? How can we create an environment where a community member walks in and feels welcome and really feels a vibe of having access to healthy food, but also in an environment that's welcoming? And it's really the neighborhood market owner is really essential because they already have a lot of the relationships locally. And ultimately, when there's that commitment to the community and the store owner really wants to make a difference with their business to be more sustainable, working with us, then it's essentially a 2-year commitment where then we'll start to bring in partners like Gensler, who's a worldwide architect firm, like Sweetgreen, and then help to make improvements, not just in the inside, but also the outside. And it becomes a full transformation.
Yeah, Chris, I think that these local small markets and corner stores are in, even before COVID-19, a really unique position to serve their neighborhoods, even if at first, you know, they might be dismissed depending on where you grew up. I know I grew up in the suburbs of Dallas. If you ever asked me, Chris, if I'd ever think about getting, you know, produce or, you know, some of those daily needs from a 7-Eleven that I had to drive to, I mean, it wouldn't come to mind. It just wasn't the nature of the corner store in my particular neighborhood. But in these more dense neighborhoods within Los Angeles, with a lot of mixed-use developments, that pre-World War II developments, I think that these smaller food stores that are actually within our neighborhoods, as you mentioned, serve a really unique purpose and are in a unique position to help their neighbors lead healthier lives. And I like how you mentioned, I know Kelly Jackson first comes to mind whenever you talk about you're working with these different merchants. They've already been serving the neighborhood. They've already built that trust. They already have each other's hearts. So whenever we talk about, okay, how do we help someone in a food desert get better access to healthy food, help them lead healthier lives, I would much rather have those nudges and those words of encouragement from a trusted community member as opposed to, you know, a stranger or someone just telling me without understanding my heart and my goals that maybe I should buy an apple instead of a Twix now and then. Describe that transformation a little bit, maybe focusing on Kelly. What was that like after intervening with Hank's Mini Market? What stories initially come to mind of how her relationship with the community, once she was in a unique position to encourage folks to lead a healthier lives and have the product to do so, to share that message with her customers? What was that like?
Working with Kelly was a 2-year process where at first it was very much a liquor store that you would see in South LA. And when Kelly transitioned to take ownership of the business, she was really thinking about the community and really thinking about like her interests as well. So her background, you know, is in art, and she really wanted to create a vibrant space that shares that with the community and makes a connection. We started working with Kelly, and over 2 years, we started to bring in partners, specifically Sweetgreen, on the project to work with us and to transform the inside and the outside of the store. So it was really about creating a vision and plan for what that looks like. And I remember after that transformation, actually not too long ago, I walked in with a few community members that lived in the neighborhood, and they couldn't believe that they were still very much in the liquor store because the space was completely transformed. So there's still liquor there, but it's not as prevalent as it was before. And the space is vibrant, and it's an open space where people who shop there now will, even if they do purchase alcohol, now they'll leave with like an apple or like an alternative snack. And community members was just so impressed. And now there's people there that, you know, they'll walk in and they'll host community events inside the store. So it really was an opportunity to bring in this element of community and still having a business, and then allowing for the store owner to bring in her own personality into something that she cares about. And it's very much a family business. So having a family business transcend to incorporating community is something that I would say it's something that's still pretty amazing for most people who visit Hank's Mini Mart in South LA.
Chris, I mess with those sweet green salads. Oh, man. I had the pleasure of visiting LA, of course, pre-COVID, a couple times a year. I have a good friend who lives in North Hollywood. I heard they just opened one up in the Valley, so she's really excited. But we would always go down to, I'm trying to recall the name of the street, La Brea?
Yes.
But gosh, I mess with those salads. Those things are mad good. And listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Kelly Jackson and her story, at Hank's Mini Markets, we had the honor of interviewing her on a past episode of It's the Little Things. So if you peep the show notes below the player, you can find a link to that episode. Totally recommend you all check it out. Chris, let's take a shift. You've done a fantastic job explaining how these local small markets and corner stores are in a unique position to serve our neighbors. Oftentimes, they're already incorporated in the neighborhood. Instead of me having, you know, hop in the whip and drive 5 miles to the supermarket to get produce of the day's needs, with the right nudges, as you guys have done at the LA Food Policy Council, we can help these existing assets that are already integrated in our neighborhoods, already have great trust and respect for their peers, to carry product that can help them lead healthier lives. With the coronavirus, I think we've really witnessed, you know, the fragility of centralized food systems. I know at least here in Denton, my town, once COVID started to get rampant throughout North Texas, you know, of course, all of the supermarkets were running out of product. We saw a lot of distributors that were struggling to meet demand. How has the coronavirus affected these markets that you work with throughout South Los Angeles?
So in the first few days when there was announcements around the pandemic, stores, neighborhood stores saw an influx of customers now and starting to shop in the store, and a lot of items began to get sold out. I remember a stoner mentioning to me as well, like, hey, I'm seeing new customers that I've never seen before. And so they're also sourcing materials from wholesale retailers, and they're going there, and they're also being faced with long lines. Oftentimes they're waking up at 3 a.m. to make line. And then right now, there's also, because they are a family business and some family members have been laid off, they're incorporating their family to support the business. So they're taking shifts in line at the wholesaler. And one of the biggest challenges is still being able to get inside and then being limited to items, or, you know, having to come back another time for those items. So that really made an impact, because most of the neighborhood stores are within walking distance to community residents who don't have access to transportation. So that was a really huge detriment to the business. And so what stoners were able to do is that they were able to communicate amongst our network of healthy neighborhood market owners. And then through those avenues, we were able to see who had extra, you know, gloves or like extra hand sanitizers or maseca or tortillas. And then we were able to make that connection to be able to source those items to other stores in other communities that customers might need. So it was a challenge to also face what I would say like the grocery industry as a whole was facing with procuring items in store.
Sure. And those stories, Chris, you know, specifically thinking about the store owners reaching out to one another, hey, I'm running low on this or that, can y'all help me out, and vice versa. It really speaks to the value of why we want to have, you know, these strong local food systems. I mean, I think it speaks to the resiliency of these places. I imagine you're not going to see Kroger hollering at Tom Thumb saying, hey, I'm running low on X and Y, can you hook it up? You know, we don't really have that interpersonal connection with one another and kind of that shared goal of, you know, I'm a member of this community and I want to serve my peers, help them lead healthier lives. Something we talk a lot about at Strong Towns, Chris, is acknowledging that the places that we built are very complex human habitats. Rarely do we think that, you know, a particular person or a particular institution can have like that silver bullet grand scheme master plan to fix whatever social issue might be in place, whether it's poverty, food access, whatever it might be. Instead, as you guys have done at the LA Food Policy Council, we advocate for more of a bottom-up revolution. So what local players can we incorporate, like you guys, who are, you know, humbly observing where the community is struggling and then doing what you can to address that struggle? And I think what we're seeing with these small corner markets in LA, you know, because they're working on the neighborhood level, because there's such a quick feedback loop to say, hey, like what's happening with COVID, whether it's distribution, having inventory, ensuring that we're instilling procedures that help practice and encourage social distancing, we're seeing these stores react to these stressors much more quickly and much more effectively, as opposed to, you know, say a large institution that it may take days, weeks, or months to actually respond to that feedback. Do any particular stories come to mind of how these stores have pivoted despite the coronavirus? Anything come to mind?
Absolutely. So there's a store that we're working with in El Sereno in East LA, the Village Mart and Deli, and they've been able to adjust pretty quickly where now there's a pickup area. So customers are able to drive through and order their groceries in advance and their food. So they're able to do that. And then they just recently placed plexiglass, so in order to create a safer barrier for workers as well. One of the immediate things that we were able to do is create signage. And then we actually provided like a care package with masks and gloves to store owner staff at each store so that they have that as well. And then some stores actually have closed temporarily because they've had family members that are elderly. So in order to prevent the spread of anything, they just decided to close temporarily. A lot of them have also been active, reaching out on social media and talking to their community and engaging their community. So it's been a way for them to really continue to let the community know that they're still here. And it's been essential. So they've been able to really take advantage of the community support that they have now and continue to let the community know that, hey, we're still open, or, during the meantime, hey, we're still here and we're sharing our voice on social media.
Yeah. And whenever you consider, the ground that a supermarket covers in terms of their service area compared to these small local corner markets, I mean, we're seeing the latter cover far more ground in terms of service. I mean, how many of these small markets y'all have in LA? 1,300?
1,300.
Yeah, yes. It's remarkable. So just imagining that vision of, hey, like, what if we had this similar approach, this similar philosophy with all of those corner markets that, as you've done such a good job explaining, already have those great community connections, already are a trusted asset within the community, could totally be a game changer whenever it comes to food access. And again, I mean, at Strong Towns, we talk a lot about municipal finance, ensuring that, whatever it is that we want to build or develop has a return on investment. In this instance, the city is making better use of what it's already built, allowing these places to have some wiggle room and better serve their customers. I love that, Chris.
I remember also meeting with Shander, who's a store owner of Metromart in the Pico Union community. And, I walked in just a few days after everything that was happening, and we had a conversation, and she was talking about, hey, let's take some time now to rethink our store layout, because she wanted to bring in healthy alternative snacks. Right now, the store doesn't have any produce, but we started to create a vision for what a marketplace inside this store can look like. So she really wanted to take the opportunity to start making some adjustments now so that foreseeing in the next few months when everything, turns out to be a different way, she wants to be able to promote her store in a way that allows for access to alternative foods and snacks in her store.
I love that story, Chris. And I know we've been talking a lot about the corner store and how well they've been able to innovate to continue to serve their neighborhoods. But I know the work that you do at the LA Food Policy Council, when it comes to your local food systems, goes even beyond corner stores. I visited y'all's website today and saw the webpage, goodfoodla.org/COVID-19, celebrating all these other ways that because you've created and fostered this local food system, despite the stressors that we've had from the coronavirus, ways that different parts of the food system have still been able to serve their communities. From your work, do any particular stories come to mind of how we've seen some of these places respond to the stressor from coronavirus, but innovate to be able to still ensure that they're serving their peers?
Absolutely. So our policy team has actually made a big push to keep farmers markets open and to be able to create the measures in order to promote social distancing and make sure people feel safe, being able to still shop at farmers markets. Also, I've seen South LA Cafe, which also has South LA Market, and they started to put together grocery boxes. So they have a model where if you purchase a grocery box, they're actually able to donate one to someone who is in need. And they're developing a corner pickup. So you can actually drive up and then curbside, actually get your groceries or get your coffee. And in that way, still continue to be open. And then I've also noticed and seen other stores participate in a program through Councilman Heron Dawson, and they're able to stay open because they're able to provide meals for seniors. So a store that we're working with is Hot and Cool Cafe. So they've been able to participate in meals for seniors and to be able to stay open and provide healthy food for people who are in need.
Beautiful. And listeners, if you want to see that webpage that really gives some tremendous detail about how these local food players have responded to COVID, innovated to ensure they're still serving their community, I'll include that link in the show notes below. It's goodfoodla.org/COVID-19. Chris, as we wrap up, you know, as we've talked about throughout this podcast, COVID-19 has really revealed where, not only where our food system shines in terms of the local level, but where it struggles whenever we focus on, you know, centralizing production and distribution. From your expertise and the great work that you've done working with these different local players over the past few weeks, what lessons have you learned? Like, what do you hope to see for the future as we eventually get back to somewhat of normalcy? Where do you hope that when it comes to food access and all the great goals that you guys have at the LA Food Policy Council, what shifts do you hope we see follow to ensure that we're continuing to foster and, you know, really show some love to these local food systems?
I definitely see community wanting to definitely be involved more at a local level. I see corner store markets, neighborhood markets adjusting to the needs of their customers. So continuing to keep an open ear for what's happening locally. And then really, I see just seeing how centralized everything really is now starting to probe a little bit more, because even before COVID, we were starting to notice just how centralized food distribution is with produce at the terminal market here in LA. And so sometimes it's not as accessible to small neighborhood markets. So I think that that conversation should carry on, and looking at the challenges that stores are facing now and looking at the conversation that community members are and will be having in the next few months, it's going to be important to shape what that will look like, what a shopping experience will look like for someone locally. And then how can we continue to have a conversation with legislators? And one of the things that's happening right now that our policy team has also worked on is the Good Food Zone policy here in LA, which is an incentive for small businesses and entrepreneurs in low to moderate income communities to have incentives and really continue to approach food access in a new way.
I love it. And Chris, I know I speak on behalf of the whole Strong Towns team, where we're really excited to follow along. Again, we've had the pleasure of having a handful of you all from the LA Food Policy Council on the podcast. I know you guys have been OGs kind of with these kind of interventions. I know New York has done some bodega interventions in the past, but I know I've been bragging on you guys a lot lately. You guys are really an excellent model of what it means to really build and foster these local food systems that, again, not only are smart financially for a city in terms of municipal finance, but are also just on a social community level are huge wins. So keep up the fantastic work. I'm really excited to follow along. If anybody wants to connect with you and learn more about all the great work going down at the LA Food Policy Council and the Healthy Neighborhood Markets Network, where can people connect with you online?
People can connect with us on Instagram, HNMN Network, and goodfoodla.org.
Perfect. Y'all got to peep that, Graham. I mean, it's been a favorite of mine these days. I mean, and it adds just a great visual effect to the ways that these local food stores have innovated and pivoted to ensure that they're still serving their communities. Highly recommend it. And listeners, I will make sure to include all of those links in the show notes below. Chris, thank you, man. This has been such a pleasure. Great chatting. Let's do this again soon. This was a joy.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob.
Thanks, Chris. We'll talk soon.
Right on.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.